Thursday, August the 20th, 2024. Welcome back, everybody. This is For the Numbers, presented by FTNFantasy.com. My name is Adam here. New week. Took the day off on Monday to really, really digest everything that we saw over the course of preseason week two. We saw a lot of starters play. We saw a lot of huge plays, a lot of disappointing plays. And unfortunately, once again, players are getting hurt. So we'll break down everything that we saw, mostly everything, from week two of the preseason. And to do that, I have a guest. Jeremy Popolar is my colleague from FTNFantasy.com and host of the FTN Dynasty podcast, which you can check out as a part of FTN Media. Joins me on the program today. Jeremy, busy day for you, so I appreciate the time. We're going to talk about some players that impressed in the preseason, maybe some players that didn't, and unfortunately some players that are dealing with some injuries. But how was your weekend? How are things as we ramp up here, getting close to the start of the season?
Busy. That was what the weekend was. You know, like you said, yeah. The season's ramping up. You know, I've got some lingering dynasty leagues that decided to like redraft like last week. And I'm like, guys, we've had all summer, but okay. All right. Let's just do it all over again. But either way, you know, that college football's around the corner, doing a lot of stuff for that over at FTN. And
yeah, you'll be excited about this. I am the most excited I've been for college football in years. Like usually I watch when I can, but I'm going to be invested this season, I think. So that's exciting.
I feel like the college football NCAA game like really is going to drive.
And that's exactly why.
Like I think that game is going to make college football off the charts this year. Like just the casual fans going to probably be tuning in much more than they did. And that's good. That's good for fantasy football. You know, that's one of the reasons that I love doing it, you know, especially in the dynasty format. That's kind of all I play, like being a step ahead on those rookies. You know, you're watching them throughout the entirety of their college career. You know, it can hurt you. You get some of those, you know, take locks and Devy Love there that, you know, you hear about, but you know, every now and then it works out for you, but it's always nice having that little bit of an edge. You kind of really know who that player was, as opposed to skimming through and kind of like, not necessarily that everybody skims through, but sometimes if you're an average fantasy football player in dynasty, like you're not spending hours watching tape, you know? So if you're watching the games, at least you have a little bit more knowledge than you have for just kind of some quick research near the draft.
Yeah. And I am already very close to being all in on Tet McMillan from Arizona. So I'm excited to watch him this season. And see, obviously he's going to be one of the top prospects, but yeah, I'm excited for your breakdowns of this upcoming class.
I'm curious to see how that breaks down for the class. Like, you know, Travis Hunter's around there. You know, you've, like you said, Territory of McMillan. You've got Luther Burden. You've got Evan Stewart, if the transfer to Oregon could help him a lot. So we'll see. We'll see how it breaks out. It's an interesting class, but I'm excited for the running back class. Yeah. I hope that most of these guys declare. If they do, this running back class is going to be loaded and you're going to want some first round picks, because there's a lot of teams even at the NFL level. I know they don't use them that well, but Dallas will probably be lined up for one this year. You know, you've got probably maybe the Chargers, let's be honest.
I think the Raiders might.
The Raiders, let's be honest. We can love those guys as much as we want.
Maybe we'll talk about,
you know.
Maybe we'll talk about the Raiders backfield today. And closing out the dynasty discussion, I have a rebuilding team where I have now 5 first round selections next year in the draft. I'm so excited.
Nice.
But the 2024 season is about to start. I mean, it is so exciting. I have my redraft leagues starting up this weekend. It's my most important draft of the year. I am so excited. And we're back on the podcast 3 times a week. And of course, once again, with football close to being here, so are the largest pro football contests in Vegas with Circa, once again sponsoring the podcast this season. Circa Survivor and Circa Millions are now up to a record $16 million in guaranteed prizes with 2 ways to win and 0 rake. Circa Survivor contestants select one team each week with no point spread, last the longest to win it all with $10 million guaranteed. With Circa Millions, make 5 picks against the spread each week for your share of $6 million guaranteed through quarterly and full season payouts. Enter in Nevada, play from anywhere. Visit circusports.com for the details. Jeremy, before we get into the top preseason takeaways from week 2, we have to get through some news. And there's plenty of it. I mean, multiple players that it looks like we could have legitimate players who are in jeopardy of missing week 1. And it starts with Jaylen Warren in Pittsburgh. left the game against Buffalo over the weekend. I believe it was a hamstring. Reports are that he's going to miss multiple weeks. And obviously, week one's what, 3 weeks out? At least, you know, the Sunday is about 3 weeks out. That puts him, depending on how fast he can recover, he can miss week one. And obviously, it's a new offense with Arthur Smith, and we just saw him not fully utilize Bijan Robinson and give Tyler Allgeier goal line carries. And like, if we got word that Jalen Warren was going to miss the first 2 weeks of the season, what does that do for the rest of this backfield? Because right now, Harris and Warren going right next to each other, essentially in drafts, both players, it's pretty much been what we've seen the preseason so far this preseason, what we saw in the regular season last season, right? It's been like 55-45, Jalen Warren absolutely dominating third downs. But man, it seems like so long ago, but there was a time where Najee Harris was like 80% opportunities, 70 catches. That between, you know, the change in quarterback and then the emergence of Jalen Warren, that's gone away. But if Warren's going to miss some time, like, what should this do for the ADPs of this backfield? Because you look at the last two seasons with Warren emerging, Najee's only played 13 and 32% of the long down and distances the past two seasons. And then last year, Jalen Warren led all running backs with 24 third down receptions, according to FTN's Advanced Stats Hub, and he had an 81% third down snap share. Like, this could be huge for Harris, not to the point where you bump him up a couple rounds because it might just be 1-2 weeks where he's getting all of the work, but we know this team wants to run the football. This could be a massive workload for Harris out of the gate.
Yeah, it could be, except for you guys, I forgot one key piece of information there, Adam.
Cordarrelle Patterson?
Yeah, baby. Cordarrelle Patterson.
It's funny. I actually have it in my notes, and it's like slightly sarcasm, but it's also not.
I'd love it to be sarcasm. I would, Adam, but it's probably not. I do think Najee will handle more, and I don't think Patterson would take what Warren would probably get. But I do think Patterson will be involved. Maybe LaMichael Perine, if he makes the roster. You know, some dynasty love there. You know, he's a guy that's been floating around. Maybe he'll get an opportunity here. Because I think they'll probably keep four, would be my guess. Maybe they keep, you know, Dejon Edwards or someone like that. But I think probably maybe Perine, if Warren's really questionable, headed that far. I would say he may miss week one, like at the day's end. Like, missing a week here isn't the end of the world if they can get him down the stretch and make sure that hamstring's all right, because that's something that can linger if they don't give him enough time. They'll probably roll Najee Harris with a huge workload. Great, maybe DFS guy week one. I forgot who they're playing, though. I think they're playing...
They play the Falcons, actually. Oh, Falcons. They actually play...
I was going to say the Ravens, so, you know, it was a, you know, bird-related team, right? Yeah, so I would say maybe... You know, like in that retrospect, like you said, the ADP to me, I'm not really moving. Like, you're talking, yeah. If he misses time, it's 2 weeks.
Like, is it a situation where, like, if this pushes Warren down, are you taking advantage? Because, like,
we know
he's been one of the most efficient players in the NFL. And again, once maybe the first week he's back, he's a little bit limited if he's not 100%. Mm-hmm. But once he's fully healthy, it's probably going to be that split that we've seen, 55% to Harris, 45% to Warren. Warren getting all of the passing work.
Yeah, and even that, you know, maybe they have some crazy packages with Justin Fields at the goal line, like stuff like. I'm sure we're gonna see some stuff that's gonna by the end of the year be ripping our like hair out of our skull, because we're gonna be like, why? And taking.
I mean, we've already seen it in the preseason with Pat Freiermuth's usage.
Like,
so.
It's just gonna be a mess. And it's going to be tough. And it's not really a backfield I've really drafted. I know there's going to be viability here. Someone's going to pay off for what it is. So maybe I would take Warren because he's going to be cheaper. But there's just so many other options around these guys that I'm like, I'll go elsewhere, whether it's receiver, tight end, or, you know, a different running back.
Yeah. And again, like I said, it seems so long ago, but if Warren misses the first 2 weeks, there's a chance we see that massive workload from Harris, but his passing game usage has completely fallen off the past couple seasons. Last year, in particular, he had just 5 receptions on third down with a 20.6% snap share on third down. So that's where he can be really good for the first couple weeks, but it's not like that role is going to be his once Warren is fully healthy. So
yeah.
Keep an eye on it. Maybe, if anything, if Warren's ADP starts to fall, you take advantage of that. DeAndre Hopkins... He's been out for a little bit. looked like he would be really, really likely out for week one. Now reports out of Tennessee suggest he will be and expects to be ready for week one. I don't think this did too much to the ADP the past couple weeks. Maybe it pushed Calvin Ridley up a tiny bit. Does this do much for you? And who is the wide receiver you're drafting from Tennessee, if anyone? Because there's, I kind of alluded to this on a previous podcast, but the last couple of seasons we've seen the Lions become this elite offense. The Texans become, you know, the offense that comes out of nowhere to be awesome. If I had to guess who that offense would be this season, obviously it all depends on Will Levis's progression, but my guess would be, my prediction would be Tennessee. And we know this team's going to throw the ball more than they have in 10 plus years.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it doesn't really, I never really moved Hopkins a ton to begin with. Like, again, it's similar to Jalen Warren. Like, we knew he was going to maybe miss a couple weeks. Like, you're not, I mean, yes, you want to win week one. Who doesn't? But, like, you're really trying to build to win near the end of the season. You got to get in the playoffs, but then it only matters in those 3 weeks, really, more times than not. You got to get somebody who has a good situation in that category. So I never moved Hopkins a ton, but I would say that I'm still leaning towards Ridley. Ridley's just a guy that I've always loved throughout his career. I think he'll pair well with Will Levis. The issue, I guess, would be that maybe Hopkins pairs a little better as far as like the off-script stuff that Levis does than Ridley. Ridley's a little bit more in that timing category. He can still obviously make some things happen when the play breaks down and get open. But I don't think it really moves the needle either way for me. Like you said, it's an exciting offense. There's a lot of potential here, especially what we saw from Levis as far as a big playability goes, and that's probably still going to be Hopkins. So, again, you could take it the same approach as like the Pittsburgh backfield, but in receivers here, maybe you take the cheaper guy. But neither of them are going that expensive. Like, I mean, I have Fantasy Pros pulled up right here. I mean, Ridley's ranked as the 33rd receiver and Hopkins is 40. Like, I don't know where that is necessarily in ADP at this moment, but I know they're probably pretty late to where you could really take either and not feel too bad. They're going to be your fourth or fifth receiver. There you go. You know, that feels comfortable more so than relying and maybe, you know, being as like a zero wide receiver target. I don't know if I feel comfortable, but if he's, you know, three or four, like I'm okay with like Ridley or Hopkins.
Yeah. And there will be upside on a per drop back per target basis with Levis. Last year led the NFL in percentage of passes 20 plus yards down the field. It was over like 22%. So there'll be more, you know, scheme stuff with Brian Callahan there, but at the end of the day, Will Levis is still going to take shots down the field, which we do love for fantasy. Somehow, some way, we manage to talk about the Bills every time we're both on the podcast, and why wouldn't we? But they're pretty polarizing in fantasy, especially the wide receiver room, and right now, it's really, really, really banged up. I mean, Marquez Valdes-Scantling is going to miss some time. Curtis Samuel's now week to week with turf toe, which is not what you want to see for a wide receiver. That's something that's really, really kept wide receivers out. Obviously, he has time to be ready for week one, but what do you make of the Curtis Samuel week to week status? Are you overly concerned? And then what are your thoughts on the Bills wide receiver position as a whole for fantasy and what we've seen, because I'm sure you followed it pretty closely, the rotation in the preseason so far, because it's kind of tough to fully, you know, take into consideration what we've seen because Curtis Samuel's been out and Matt Collins was out, I think, the first game. And then, like, you know, Shakir's had this weird usage where, like, the first game he was running with, you know, all of the snaps and routes. But then, like, obviously they were without some guys. Samuel was limited. So, like, and then Samuel was out week two. Keon Coleman is the one they're clearly trying to see a ton of because he's the rookie and they want to give him as much playing time. But like, what do you make of this rotation? What do you expect to be? Because I've talked about it all offseason. Like, there is a chance that Khalil Shakir, as much as I love him, just doesn't produce, but isn't fantasy reliable just because he may not play on snaps where the Bills are in 12 personnel. And I think with Knox healthy and Kincaid as the clear top target in the offense, that probably will be in 12 personnel 30 plus percent of the time. So thoughts on Samuel and thoughts on this rotation as a whole as we go into the regular season.
Yeah, the Curtis Samuel news isn't great. So the way that I have approached this, I think that the Samuel news doesn't affect me a ton. I feel like this room has kind of always been muddy to begin with, and it was always going to depend on how the usage broke down. And I think
Samuel was always the one lock, and then it was going to be like, who's, are they keeping Matt Collins in kind of like the Gabe Davis role because he really good in in the run game? And then, but for me, like Samuel, if he's out, obviously that impacts everybody, but he might, again, it's just
I don't know if he was like a lock to be fantasy relevant. I know a lot of people.
Oh yeah, I meant like in terms of playing time. Like he was the player I felt the most comfortable would be playing and getting the scheme stuff.
I didn't. And the reason I didn't, I'll go from here, is as I think that the way they want to use him is almost gadget like. Like he's not going to be like strictly a gadget guy by any means, but I think they want to manufacture touches for him. He's going to be coming out of the backfield. He's going to maybe be in the slot a little bit. Like he's not even a 12 personnel guy. Like he's not going to play 12 either. Shakir and Samuel will not play in 12s.
So you think
12 is going to be Matt Collins and Keon? Both bigger guys.
That is zero separation.
Can block. And yes, Keon Coleman is not a separation.
It's going to be play action based when they're in 12, though.
Like it's going to be play action based, like you said. Also, what Keon Coleman does is not the traditional separation. Keon Coleman has separation at the catch point. Like, I know the numbers weren't there. Like, if you looked at Pro Football Focus as far
some
as
terrible
his
passes,
actual
though.
Contested catch rate, but we're talking about Jordan Travis. And, like, yes, Jordan Travis had his moments, but, like, it's like Trubisky throwing to you, and we've seen what it looks like when Trubisky throws a Keon Coleman. So, you've seen the camp highlights of what Keon Coleman does when Josh Allen's throwing the football to him.
I thought his separation in these games hasn't been that bad either.
And it hasn't been. And like the big one right now is the touchdown catch that from the Pittsburgh game. And it's all over Twitter and everybody's trying to galaxy brain.
We have to remember, like, Jeremy.
Oh,
like,
see, Keon Coleman's terrible.
His career's over.
Separate.
His career's over. He's done.
He's Chase Claypool. He's this, that. Like,
Kenny Galladay.
Relax. Like, we knew who he was. We all knew who he was.
And the Bills told us he was going to come along slowly.
Like, everybody had said that. Like, we're double dipping now and we're saying, oh, look, he can't separate. See? Knack, knack, knack. Like, we already knew this. Like, this is who Keon Coleman is. So, until the games matter, I'll care more. Is it ideal to see what he's done? No. But he has made two. He was open in the Pittsburgh game. Maybe he should have caught that. Yeah. Sure. Maybe he pulled up.
Josh Allen's
used to it, but it was led a little far out.
Josh Allen's played two preseason drives.
Exactly.
In two games.
And then the game in Pittsburgh, too, he was open in the end zone, too. And he tripped over himself, slashed the corner, however that worked out, tripped a little bit. Throw wasn't great. Like, you know, we can argue it was a tough throw, too. I mean, he's trying to throw over a linebacker into the end zone. Like, yes, he beat his guy. It was a weird situation the way it played out. But again, I think Coleman and Hollins are the guys that they want on the field the most. Because of the blocking ability in 12.
Yeah.
So I don't think Samuel and Shakir would have been out there to begin with. I do think Shakir is going to have value. Probably not as reliable, like you said, but I do think there'll be value. And it may be more reliable than we think. Because if he's out there and say it's 11, like, he's probably going to get the ball. We've seen what he does when he is out there. And he makes big plays here or there. And he's a yak guy. And he can, you know, he might see six targets, but each one might go for 15 yards, like, and one might be a touchdown. So, like, yes, it's going to be a little bit inconsistent because the usage volume wouldn't be there, but when he's on the field, there's probably a high percentage of the targets going his way, so it might balance itself out. So I've kind of always been in on Shakir as just kind of the cheaper option, and I think Keon Coleman has the highest upside. Like, all said and done, preseason and not, I think once it breaks down, I think Keon Coleman leads this team as far as fantasy points go from the pass catcher category, possibly beats Dalton Kincaid. I know everybody's in on Dalton Kincaid. I'm a little bit leery.
If that happens,
just because I think that Coleman's a better red zone guy. Once we actually get games that matter, they're running better routes and they're not just running these little slants and like Mitch Trubisky's throwing it God knows where. So I think once it all breaks down, once we get into the later half of the season, I think Keon Coleman's going to be a big option. He's playing so much now because they know they need to count on him and they need to get him these game reps. So I'm still in on Coleman. And I think if we see some dip here because of everybody just slandering him on Twitter, I'd be buying in on it. It's late enough in drafts that, like, again, this falls into that. He's late enough, like, I'm taking that flyer. So
it's also not forget he literally turned 21 2 months ago.
Yeah, it's overreaction. You're seeing it all over. Like, I get it. You know, I post videos.
Well,
on
well it doesn't
too,
help
but,
to.
Like, it's just like we're.
I was just gonna, it doesn't help that dipping. Worthy goes obviously crazy this offseason mm-hmm. and preseason, and that was the trade with the Chiefs, and that doesn't help. But
like, I actually watched though. Did you see? I saw it was Laquan from NFL Network there. Mm-hmm. Guy that I've followed and been friends with on Twitter for a long time, but he posted a video. I didn't even notice. But Worthy was actually offsides on that play, that big long one that they caught from Mahomes. So, you know, ultimately it would have been called back. Refs missed it, but just saying.
So he is.
And
he is
the corner that
Kadarius
was trying
Tony
to cover.
Roll.
Yeah. The corner trying to cover him, like just goes flat footed and points it out. And then, you know, big advantage, but he probably still would have blew by him because he was wide the hell open. But either yeah. way, I'm just saying shouldn't have counted. No.
Okay. Final piece here. We have official word on starting quarterbacks in Washington with Jaden Daniels. Duh. And Gardner Minshew will start for the Raiders. Any takeaways from here? I expected, everybody knew it was going to be Jaden Daniels. I fully expected Minshew, so really nothing new from me. My rankings had it this way. Jaden Daniels in the preseason, though, has just kind of showcased the fantasy upside he really has in this offense.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't change much for me. Maybe Daniels moves up a little bit, but like the only reason I'm moving him up is because I was probably too low on him to begin with. I think that the abilities there, my worry still with Daniels is just going to be the brain as soon as he turns into a runner. That's always been his issue. And we already saw that it still hasn't been cleaned up in this last preseason game. So he's not Josh Allen. He's not even Anthony Richardson. That's slender frame. That's what worries me with Daniels. But I mean, we know that he's a good deep ball passer. We know he can execute an offense. We know he's dangerous with his legs. So doesn't move it for me. We knew that was kind of coming, like you said. And then Gardner Minshew, I kind of just fully expected-ish. You know, I was kind of like 50-50 on him and O'Connell, but they were ranked near each other anyways. And I've been ranking it basically doesn't change much because I just expect it to be Davante Adams' show. So doesn't really move much for me.
All right, we will take a break, but when we come back, Jeremy and I going through some of our key takeaways from preseason week 2, who stood out, which teams are in the right direction, which players are moving up the rankings, just things that stood out from the weekend's action as we get close to the start of week 1. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back. Jeremy Popolars with me on the podcast today. Let's talk about preseason week 2, Jeremy. Key takeaways. What stood out to you the most? Anything from position battles to personnel to player production, performances, whatever stood out to you, let's hear it. Preseason week 2.
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious is Chicago. We'll start there. I'll take the lofty softball. Caleb Williams looks pretty good. He's looking pretty much everything we expected. You know, the off-script stuff is there, much like we saw at USC. Looks a little bit more comfortable in the pocket as far as a passer goes, which is kind of some of the knocks on him coming out. So I think we've got a winner there for now, at least in Chicago. We'll see once the defenses start running a little more exotic stuff, but looking good there. But my biggest thing was like Romo Dunze looked pretty good. The catch he made along the sidelines was beautiful. We saw him
he already seems like he's going to be the broken play, get open for Caleb when he extends. That's going to be Caleb's target.
Yeah.
It clearly looks like that already.
I think there could be some value here for him. I know he's been a little overpriced to begin with, so it might hurt to really get. I don't know if he'll still be able to reasonably afford Romo Dunze in redraft, but.
I'm still taking a lot of the veterans over him, like Chris Godwin goes right around him, Deontay Johnson, like that's not even close for me as much as I love Rome. And Rome quite literally is my favorite prospect in this draft class at any position. So like I love Rome. And just imagine if that touchdown did you see where he stepped out of bounds in the back of the end zone where the lines were painted so awkwardly? I don't even blame Rome for that. That was so awkward looking. So imagine if that touchdown happened.
He's got to know that. But either way, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, 100%. Like, he has to make that play. But I'm sitting there watching, and I'm like, that's a touchdown. Like, I was like, why are they not reviewing this? And I realized it was not even the end zone. But, imagine if that. And, like, we joke about it saying, oh, if he caught that touchdown, the ADP would rise. But, like, that's kind of how people think. We see it all the time in the preseason.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm worried it does. He was already too expensive for me kind of in redraft to begin with. But this is positive for the guys that, you know, maybe it looks that he could kind of return a little bit on that value.
I think he's going to be better than Keenan Allen.
He may. I mean, Keenan Allen, we have yet to see really what it's going to be from him. But Odunze is just so electric. I mean, his one rush is 16 yards. One catch he was with 45 yards. Like, he's a guy that's not going to need a ton of touches to return some fantasy points in a week. So it's exciting. And this offense, if it's anything that everybody expects it to be, they'll have three viable receivers for us. Yes, it's probably not going to be high end ceiling, but like,
they're definitely not going to have a tight end.
You know, yeah, it's Gerald Everett now. They're like, yeah, Cole Kmet, who?
Cole Kmet was like, as soon as Shane Waldron went there, and like literally the second move they made for Inche, I think it was obviously Swift and then Gerald Everett. And I'm like, oh, Cole Kmet's done. Cole Kmet's literally in the Noah Fant role that Noah Fant had last year, which was splitting time with Will Dissly and Colby Parkinson. That's exactly what we've seen in the preseason. So Will Dissly, he is some, like, he even before the preseason usage, which solidified my worries, wasn't somebody I was even remotely considering drafting. That's like, he's not even like I could have no tight end on my starting roster in round 14. I probably still wouldn't draft Cole Kmet. I think he's literally, did you start Noah Fant last year in fantasy? Nope.
Don't get me started.
And that's the role that.
Hey, don't say nope. All right, some dynasty roster. That bad boy was okay. Rolling every week.
In a 12-team redraft, did you start Noah Fant outside of the desperate situation? Nope. And that's the role Cole Kmet's in. And Gerald Everett, it's not even just the fact that he's like, I've always thought Gerald Everett's a really good player, but he's been with Shane Waldron every step of the way. So, like, there's clearly a familiarity there and a trust. So, yeah.
Yeah, I see this offense being, like, Bengals-wise. You know, like, you don't have a viable tight end. Every now and then, they really get a catch here or there. But you have, like, three viable receivers pretty regularly. So,
yeah. What did you think of some of the backfield usages we saw over the weekend in Denver? Miami's kind of been a talking point with how they utilize Devon Achane, you know, as a wide receiver. And then Denver's been, to me, one of the most polarizing backfields all offseason because if Jaleel McLaughlin can get that Samaje Perine role, he can be really good in a PPR format. Javonte's kind of clearly shown that those rumors of him being cut were just over-exaggerated because in this, I believe whenever he's been out there with the starters, he's kind of like dominated. But we did see Jaleel McLaughlin get in there quite a bit over the weekend, also inside the 5-yard line, which is weird because like maybe after week one, I was worried about McLaughlin because Samaje Perine had the same exact massive third round role he had all last season. And then this, you know, game, it's, you know, a lot more McLaughlin. So what do you make of those two backfields, especially Denver? Because, you know, it's early, but they might have a quarterback too.
Yeah, I mean, Bo Nix seems pretty legit at this point. Not like world beater, but he's going to move the ball. He's going to distribute a lot of what he did at Oregon. You know, it's what they're going to ask of him. So I like that for Denver. I really like this backfield. And I think you're going to get two guys. I think the Javonte Williams thing was always overblown. Like I said it from the beginning when that came out. Like, yeah, it makes sense the way that they broke down that article. Like, yeah, they're not going to cut Audric Estime. They just spent a decent draft capital on him. Yeah, they want Jaleel McLaughlin, who they like. Yeah, okay, so it's Javonte Williams or Samaje Perine. Like, do we really think Perine was going to beat Javonte Williams? Like, I get Javonte had the down year last year, but again, it was first year off of a major knee surgery. This is year two. Javonte's clearly the most talented back in that backfield. Yes, the numbers are a little bit more explosive for McLaughlin, but the size isn't there for Jaleel McLaughlin. He's going to have to be a at least split touch type of guy that Jalen Warren, the Devon Achane, like, trying to think here, other guys that are a little bit slighter. We'll go with those two for now. But like the smaller slighted guys that, you know, you're going to need to have somebody else also take some of the in between the tackles type of beating and be also viable. But I really think it's Javonte Williams is going to be the lead touch guy out of this backfield. I think Jaleel McLaughlin could have a good role. We kind of saw that this week, like you alluded to, where like it was kind of a split touch type of thing with the one. So I think you see kind of a 50-50 split. Is it a little messy? Yes, but we've talked about it before. I think we were on the podcast, this one actually, and we talked about it a few weeks ago of just like, I think there's viability for both of them. Like Jaleel McLaughlin could be the pass catcher, like you said, the Perine side of it, the quote unquote Alvin Kamara type of role in this offense. Javonte Williams could be a little bit that Mark Ingram type of role.
You know what I think it's going like,
to
be?
You know,
split not to the way. Same extent, but it's going to be as simple as I think Jaleel McLaughlin's going to be Tajay Spears and Javonte Williams in terms of like when they can give him that workload. It won't be that level, but like he'll be Derrick Henry, as in the Broncos are within, you know, tie game within 3 points or winning. Javonte is going to be pretty good. And games where they're, you know, you're probably going to want to start Jaleel McLaughlin when they're playing the Chiefs, right? Like,
yeah,
probably be 14-point dogs. I think, but like we saw last year, Tajay Spears was like 80-plus percent of the long down and distances. Like, if McLaughlin, that's what Samaje Perine was last year. He was like 90% two-minute drill. He was top five in the NFL in receptions in the two-minute drill. Like, that's why I've been so high on McLaughlin, because if he gets that role in a Sean Payton offense that's been towards the top of the NFL and target share to running backs for years, then yeah, those games where the Broncos are down 20-6 in the third quarter, yes, Jaleel McLaughlin could, it could be annoying going against him in full PPR leagues when he catches a bunch of dump offs, but that's what Samaje Perine did. It's all he did. And McLaughlin's more explosive. He was good on a per touch basis. So I think that's an interesting comp. I kind of like that. Like Tajay Spears kind of role where he probably gets a little bit more work than Spears did when everybody's healthy, but enough to get standalone work in a PPR format. Again, if this role is actually his and solidified, which who knows, Samaje Perine could be cut tomorrow and we could have that answer.
I think that they're just testing out. Like, they don't have their own clue. Like, Audrey Castame seems pretty far down to me. Like, he was playing special teams last week. Like,
he is really good in pass pro, which is the one thing, like, you would prefer him over McLaughlin in pass pro.
But like Javonte Williams is too. Like Javonte Williams is a good pass protector. He always has been since UNC. So like if they really needed a guy, like he could play third downs too. Like it's not like Audric Esme really has a pass. Like Audric Esme is not a guy I'm going to put it there on third down. Like, yeah, he's a good pass blocker, but like unless that's the only thing, like I don't want him going to run a route. Like love the guy, but like I don't. I'd rather have Javonte
especially
Williams
like the there. Routes, you know? That the running backs in Sean Payton's offenses tend to run. It's not just to the flat. A lot of it's, it's these angle routes, wheel routes, et cetera.
It's Javonte and McLaughlin's backfield. I think that's what it'll be. I think it'll be split touch, like we said. I think both will have viability. Like you said, kind of the Tajay Spears, Derrick Henry down the stretch there. That's probably what you get. And I think we've seen it where Payton's made two running backs very viable for fantasy. And I think we get there. Yeah. Like the pass catchers, it seems like in the wide receiver room, it seems like it's Courtland Sutton, Tim Patrick, and Josh Reynolds. So like, I mean, they're looking for playmakers, and it could just be coming from this backfield. So I'm all
I don't want to talk about the wide receivers because I'm afraid I wasted a third round rookie selection on Troy Franklin.
And it's a third round. They only hit it like 5%. I did the same thing. It's worth it. We'll see.
What else stood out to you in preseason week two?
Yeah, I mean, you wanted to talk about the Dolphins. Didn't really get to that, but
yeah, go
I think that that's something. You know, I think that that usage and the price tag has always been off on these two. I get you're paying for Achan, who could be like breaking fantasy if he really gets a role, but I think we've seen it. And I think that potentially this is a three-headed monster. Like we've heard McDaniel in some press conferences even come out and say like, why not have three? Why not have four? Like this might get real messy and real ugly. And I think Devon Achan is a guy that a lot of people may come to regret to draft. I think he'll have his blow up weeks for sure. Probably week breaking type of weeks here and there. And like you said, you saw him a little bit at receiver, but like Mostert still got a lot of the running work. Yeah, it wasn't efficient, but like he got most of the rushing touches there in that game. Wright wasn't in. So again, when Wright was in the last game, he looked pretty effective. So I think you have a backfield of guys that have proven that they can't totally stay healthy. And you're going to see a lot of a mix in and out. And it's, again, much like I mentioned just there in that last little bit about the Broncos, like Achane isn't a guy that, yes, he's sturdier for a smaller guy, but like he's not going to handle the bolt load of these carries. And I think it is what it is. I think we're going to see a lot of what we saw last year down the stretch when Achane came back. And that's what this offense will be. Just now add a third head in there and it could get real messy. I still like drafting him. I'm not like shying away, but I'm only one I'm shying away from is Achane because he's just so expensive. He's going in a point of like guys that we know are solidified roles, like, you know, Breece Hall, like a little bit later than Breece Hall, but Jonathan Taylor, Saquon Barkley. Like,
I mean, I wrote the Fantasy Crossroads article today on the site. It's Isaiah Pacheco.
Like, yeah, Isaiah Pacheco. Like the guys that have secured volume roles, and that's who he's going around. But
yeah, it's going to come down to if there is any uptick in red zone usage. Like it was all Mostert last season, tied for first in goal line carries, tied for first in carries inside the 5-yard line with 19. Achane only had 4 such carries last season. Like, if he eats into that a little bit, he could be, like, I am admittedly probably more afraid to not draft Achane than to draft him. But having said that, I do still prefer some of the players you mentioned that go around him. But just know that if you pass on Achane, just, you know, and if, especially if you're facing him that week, just maybe don't watch the game because it could get really scary for you. what else in preseason week 2? A couple more things before we get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tampa Bay is an interesting spot to kind of talk about. Mm-hmm. We saw Rashad White with crazy volume last year, and we've heard a lot out of camp, and then we've kind of seen it here in some of these games. Bucky Irving this week went 6 for 26, and we've heard a lot of love towards Bucky Irving, kind of everything that they like about him. They saw at Oregon, kind of getting a little bit of that drumbeat. We saw Sean Tucker look pretty good as well this past week.
Don't get me started.
And then on top of that, like getting outside of the receiver room, Jalen McMillan really didn't play a lot, taking a lot away from that. Kind of seems like he's the third receiver at this point. It seems
and
like
that drum beat has been loud. Todd Bowles cannot stop talking about him.
I loved Jalen McMillan. I had him egregiously high in my rookie rank.
Where do you think? Here's a good question. Where do you think Jalen McMillan would have been drafted and ranked among these wide receivers if he was fully healthy last season?
Because
that's a huge reason why Jalen Polk had the season he had.
Exactly. I really like McMillan. I think that the issue I see with McMillan is I don't know if Baker Mayfield can make 3 guys really viable, but where he's going in drafts super enough late enough that I'm taking a flyer on him.
Yeah.
But I just think like Bucky Irving might be more than we think. I feel like we've kind of like, I'm not going to write off Rashad White. I'm really not fading Rashad White, but I'm not feeling great taking Rashad White. Let's put it that way. Like I'll still draft him. But there's a little concern that like Bucky Irving might get more touches than we think. So just with the way that this preseason has gone, and I think everything's leading up. And then, like I said, Jalen McMillan seems like a guy that might be worth a late round flyer. So I think that's kind of one of the takeaways I took really in this room, because I think that this offense could have some viability still. So just a little bit that I took away. I feel like this week there wasn't a ton for me just because it seemed like a lot of teams didn't play a ton of important players. But that was one that I noticed.
Yeah, Ray Davis looked really good for Buffalo. He's getting some hype. I think Ray Davis is good. I think he'll be a good player for the Bills. But like, and a lot of people are saying like, oh, the Bills drafted Ray Davis because they don't have somebody that can give the ball to inside the 5-yard line. Like, okay, maybe that's not James Cook's role like it is for somebody like Derrick Henry, but they also had to replace running backs on their on their depth chart. Like Latavius Murray gone, Damian Harris gone. They had to re-sign Ty Johnson. So it's not like they were just like, oh, we have to bring in this running back. They were going to bring in a running back no matter what. Now, Ray Davis, you want to draft him as like, you know, a handcuff or something? Sure, whatever. Last pick of the draft. But you know this as well as I do. Like, Sean McDermott's not going to rely on rookies very often. Like right now they have to with Keon Coleman because the wide receiver position is what it is. But like, we saw when James Cook, second round draft pick, Singletary was dominating that usage his rookie season. Granted, Devin Singletary, still the most underrated player in the NFL at his position, but don't get me started there. But do you think Ray Davis is going to be anything more than just like somebody to come in and you know, get a couple carries per game in relief?
No. Outside of an injury. I like Ray Davis. I think the issue is if the Bills wanted a goal line guy, there were better options out there.
Estimate.
In the draft. So I think the reason they took Ray Davis was a Swiss Army knife of a running back. He is a good pass blocker. He can catch the ball effectively. He can run effectively. We've seen that. He's an older back. He's a little bit more established as far as what we know about him. There's less question marks. So he was a safe pick. We knew what he was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, he looked good. Yes, he did what he's supposed to. It was against second, third teamers. Like, he should look good. Like, when you draft him, like, he should look this good. So, yes, it's good. Love it. Great. But I really think that the preseason usage has also told us that he's only getting in after the first team guys are out. So, that to me tells you everything. Like, yeah, they expect him to be viable and useful when the time comes. But until James Cook slips up, and whether that's a fumble, whether that's an injury, whether that's, you know, a boneheaded play here or there, Ray Davis isn't going to be more than, you know, they got to spell James Cook after he rips off a 50 yarder, you know? So I just, don't think that there'll be a ton here for him. Maybe they go a little bit. Maybe there is, though. Like, the receiver room, we said we've had question marks. Maybe they do really run the ball, like, you know, 25 times a game. He gets 7 or 8, maybe 10. James Cook gets 15, 17. Like, maybe that's what it looks like. But I'm not really, you're drafting him for sure. He goes late enough. Like, he's a good handcuff. Like, if Cook gets hurt, like, it's going to be Ray Davis. We mentioned it. Like, there is nobody in this backfield. Ty Johnson is good for what he does, but like,
I like Ty Johnson, but I
Ray Davis will be the guy if James Cook goes down. And that's why they got him, because he can do everything. Like, he's a good, he's like really what they wanted Nyheim Hines to be when they brought him over. So they're trying to fill a Swiss Army knife with one guy, as opposed to having to bring in two running backs, like a pass catcher and then a runner. So, yes, I like it as a Bills fan. Fantasy wise, doesn't change it for me. And I probably will have less of him in redraft, because I'm sure a lot of people are going to push him up. You're seeing it all over Twitter already, where they're like, oh, I said Ray Davis is better than James Cook. It's going to happen. Like, okay. That's all I got to say. Okay.
And like, people bring up James Cook's drops last year, and then they kind of continue to start training camp, but forget Ray Davis has been fumbling a lot in camp. So
What?
Sean McDermott's not going to play
a rookie. On Twitter.
Sean McDermott is not going to play a rookie a ton for a team that's trying to win a Super Bowl. He just hasn't done it. He's not going to do it. Other than Keon Coleman, obviously, but again, and Kincaid last year, to be fair, but also like, it's different. Yeah. It's different when you have to have a team that plays multiple tight ends in the field and hasn't had a reliable pass catcher outside of Stephon Diggs for 4 years.
It's different at receiver too. Like,
right.
Coleman, like we talked about it, he may end up just running wind sprints. Like, they don't have to throw him the ball. You know what I mean? Like, they can rely on him as a running around there. Like, you know what I mean? Like, as a running back, they don't trust the rookie running backs, because like, you have to give them the ball. If he's out there, like, and it's a run play, you're not really pivoting off of that. If Coleman's out there, it's like, oh, he's not open. Okay, I'll throw someone else, or Josh just run, you know, so.
And we, of course, found a way to talk about the Bills for about 20 minutes. But to be fair, they were actually on the agenda. So give us.
I mean, there's a lot to talk about. It was a good game for them.
Yeah, there was. Still haven't scored a touchdown in the preseason, but we won't talk about that.
Overrated.
That'll do it for us today, though. Jeremy, you are about to record an episode of the Dynasty Podcast, I believe, right after this. So talk about that, where they can follow you on Twitter, all the great stuff you're doing at FTNFantasy.com. And I'm excited about, again, it's way too far, but I'm excited about once we get into closer to the NFL draft for 2025, the rookie scouting reports you do are as good as any out there. So I'm excited for those, but excited about all your content for now as well.
I appreciate that. You can find me over at FTNFantasy.com, just like Adam. Rankings are all up there. Dynasty, redraft, those are starting to get adjusted weekly. I'm sure we'll have week one ranking soon, Adam. I've been thinking about it a little bit. But yeah, Dynasty Podcast as well. It's just the FTN Dynasty Podcast on any platform that you listen. Going to have those rolling out a couple times a week. Also going to add probably a college football episode in that rotation as well. So if you're into the college football stuff, that'll be up there as well. And then, like you said, the scouting reports, we have the betting previews for the college football conferences coming out, and yeah, that's pretty much it. Not too much. X is awesome. Pope's FFH.
There it is. Make sure you check out all of Jeremy's content. Of course, subscribe to the FTN Dynasty Podcast as well as this one on all platforms. We will be back on Wednesday for some more football talk. It's here. I'm so excited. So make sure you have it locked here at FTNFantasy.com for all of your content. Hopefully use that promo code FTN15. We had 15% off for a long time for you to take advantage of all of the content, the stats hub, projections, the draft guide, everything you would need to win in fantasy football. Content will keep rolling in as we get closer and closer to week 1. For Jeremy, I'm Adam. Thanks for listening. As always, we will talk to you next time.